Well, we'll play this example of the Congo, which was recorded by Maya Deren about 2 or 3 years ago. Here's the Congo. But back to the simple rhythms, and specifically the drum solo. How many different kinds of rhythms are there that the solo drummer can play?
Oh, well, different kind of, maybe 50 or 60.
Well, what are the, maybe you can just show me briefly here with a drum, the different components of the rhythms in Haitian music, the different kinds of sounds you can get from a drum. Of this, the P-Roro recording to give an example of the many different kinds of rhythms that a solo drummer can sync up and work through developing from one to another. Does it show a pretty rich variety of examples?
Yes, sir. It shows a pretty rich variety. And I would suggest that you play that so the people could hear.
Well, this was made quite recently, about a year ago, in Port-au-Prince, by the Cook recording people, and presents the solo drummer T-Roro playing a series of rhythmic variations. Thank you.
Jim was 59. You've been to Derby, sir. You'd have seen him as well as I. The butcher that killed the top, sir, was in danger of his life. He called unto the company to bring him a larger knife. And indeed, sir, it is true, sir, I never was given to lie. And if you've been to Derby, sir, you'd have seen him as well as I. And all the old women in Derby came begging for his ears to make them a leather apron to last them 40 years. And indeed, sir, it is true, sir, I never was given to lie. And if you've been to Derby, sir, you'd have seen him as well as I. The man that killed his top, sir, was drowned in his blood, and all the people that looked on were washed away in the flood. And indeed, sir, it is true, sir, I never was given to lie. And if you've been to Derby, sir, you'd have seen him as well as I.
Come hither, son.
John, since thou art a man, I'll give the best counsel in life. Come sit down by me, and my story shall be, I'll tell how to get thee a wife, as I will, man, I will, Zur, I will, I'll tell how to get thee a wife, as I will. Thyself thou must dress in thy Sunday go best, they that first turn away and be shy, but boldly kiss each pretty maid that thou seest, and they'll call thee their love by and by, as they will, man, they will, Zur, they will, they'll call thee their love by and by, as they will. So a courting John goes in his holiday clothes, all trim, nothing ragged and torn. From his hat to his hose with a sweet yellow rose, he looked like a gentleman born, as he did, man, he did, Zur, he did. He looked like a gentleman born, as he did. The first pretty lass that John did see pass, a farmer's fat daughter called Grace. He'd scarce it how do, and a kind word or two, her fetched him a slap in the face, as her did, man her did, Zur her did, her fetched him a slap in the face, as her did. As John, never fearing or nothing at all, was walking a-down by the locks, he kissed the parson's wife, which stirred up a strife, and John was put into the stocks, as he was, man he was, Zur he was, and John was put into the stocks, as he was. If this be the way how to get me a wife, quoth John, I will never have none. I'd rather live single the whole of my life, and home to my mummy I'll run, as I will, man I will, Zur I will, and home to my mummy I'll run, as I will.
This has been a group of songs from the counties of Lincolnshire, Yorkshire, Kent, and Devonshire.
In these areas?
Well, I started as a very timid little girl in 1917 during the First World War hysteria to try to do something about the various prisoners that were being held for objection to the war. There were about 5,000 conscientious objectors who objected to the war for religious reasons and others for political reasons. But the ones to which I devoted my time were the men who objected to the war because they felt that one group of working men in one country should not be obliged to go out and shoot down another group of foreigners in another country. Mm-hmm. Their objection was on the basis of working class solidarity.
This was a labor movement.
That was the IWW.
How did you get into the IWW?
Well, it was a gradual process. I became interested first, very accidentally, in socialism because I felt that there were a good many things wrong with this country. And I went to the campaign speeches given by Eugene B. Debs during the year of 1908 and learned something about socialism and progressive political action. And later, I decided that economic action was much more suitable to meet the situation in this country than political action was. And I veered to the IWW.
On ideological grounds?
Yes.
What was the program of the IWW?
Program of the IWW mainly was to organize all workers according to the industry that they worked in, instead of dividing them into craft unions and trade unions. Mm-hmm. Everybody working in a mine should belong to the same union. Mm-hmm. Everybody working on a steamship to the same union, and so on, going into all the other industries. And it seemed to me then, and it still seems to me, that they had the most efficient approach to the solving of industrial problems as industry had progressed up to that time.
This is the point of view, to some extent, of the CIO. Is it not?
Yes, the CIO borrowed a great deal of its philosophy from the IWW and its slogans. Mm-hmm. But they were never prepared I'm afraid to go as far as the IWW was in economic action.
What do you mean by this?
I mean, I don't want anybody to think for a minute that I am a wild-eyed revolutionist. I'm a very conservative person. But I do think that the IWW had a program which struck at the roots of what is wrong with the industrial development of our country, which doesn't furnish an equal opportunity for the worker as well as for the investor.
How? You said that the CIO wouldn't go as far as the IWW, but I didn't quite understand what this means.
Well, it means that they are inclined more to compromise for some present issue.
Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, now they're working very hard on the guaranteed annual wage.
Mm-hmm.
But the IWW would have done away completely with the wage system and have had the workers take over the entire means of production.
As a syndicalist movement?
Yes.
Perhaps.
It's similar to the syndicalist movements.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be done and had always been planned as a perfectly peaceful method of taking over industry. There would never be any need for any violence, either military violence or individual physical violence. Could have been done by peaceful methods, just the same as all production and industry is carried on now by the workers in those industries, rather than by the owners in Wall Street.
You make me smile, of course, when you say this could be done by peaceful means, because who's going to give up their ownership and control if the investor has a better deal?
Who wants to keep it if it has no value? If the workers take over the means of production and operate them, well, then the capital which investors have tied up in those factories or projects would be of value, no value to them. Money is not has no intrinsic value unless it's operating.
Mm-hmm. But they wouldn't want to acquiesce in making their now valuable investment valueless.
They wouldn't like to, but they might have to. And it could be done without bloodshed. That's the important thing. There is no need of a military war to bring about a change in the methods of production.
In other words, this can be done by labor organization?
Yes.
Negotiation?
Yes.
And if you can't negotiate them out of it, then what do you do?
That would be a problem that would have to be solved when it arises. And I'm not capable at this late date of deciding how to do it when
mm-hmm.
they have,
mm-hmm.
when we haven't an organization that is prepared to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you said you started out in working then with the IWW on the cases of some conscientious objectors.
I didn't do any work for those prisoners who were classed as conscientious objectors. But naturally, the publicity that I got for the IWW affected them also, and vice versa. But the IWW's cases were handled as criminal cases. They were accused of five different crimes against the government, five different counts in the indictments against them. And each individual man was tried separately on four counts in this indictment, one count having been dismissed before they went to trial. They were charged with espionage and sabotage and treason, and I've forgotten...
Sedition?
Yes,
that's
perhaps
it.
That.
Mm-hmm. That makes four.
And the accusations against each of them were made by stool pigeons who had been planted in the organization previously. And these stool pigeons testified that as members of the IWW, they had committed certain acts of sabotage, certain acts of treason, and had destroyed property and had done things that gave aid and comfort to the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
But no individual
on trial, who was a member of the organization,
and to whom he was convicted was ever accused himself as an overt act of intent, as only the testimony of the state agents who admitted that they had committed overt acts. And the other thing was that these various prisoners were accused of, which were in any measure true, were that they wrote articles and made speeches advocating the name that the workers took no part in the war.
Mm-hmm. Advocating that they were not complying with the draft.
Well, they then, yes, they advised them not to comply with the draft and not to transport goods that would be of aid to the army and not to transport troops. And in fact, they thought that the only way in which any war could be completely avoided would be for the workers of the world to unite.
And they advocated that boycott of all war-like activity.
Yes.
And how many people were accused?
Well, they were arrested all over the country in various government headquarters in various parts of the country. Probably 1,000 men.
Mm-hmm.
And kept them in local jails. But
federal authorities carried on a raid beginning in the month of September of 1917. And they weeded out a good many of these local prisoners and finally brought about 150 men, all to Chicago, to be tried in a blanket trial. Mm-hmm. And of those 150 men, some were dismissed, and the final count was 98 when they were sent to Leavenworth Prison.
98 convictions?
Yes, out of 150 to start again.
Were there some others from over the country, too, that were convicted?
Yes, there was. There were 28 men from Sacramento who had been arrested and put on trial in Sacramento and who were called the Silent Defenders because they took no part in their trial themselves. They sat in the courtroom and refused to answer questions or do anything but identify themselves. And they were all sent to Leavenworth also at a little later date. And there were six from Wichita, Kansas. And they were all, of course, sent to Leavenworth and listed. They had been tried under the same indictments and had been listed as IWW offenders.
Mm-hmm. In your view, all these people were innocent, I take it?
They were innocent of what they were accused of. They were innocent of giving aid and comfort to the enemy, of course, or they were innocent of receiving money from Germany for the stand that they took. Mm-hmm. But they did print papers and make speeches advocating that workers should take no part in the war.
Well, did they quit from...
But that is an overt act which was not mentioned in the indictment. It was used to try to prove something else, to try to prove that they were getting money for publishing their paper and publishing such articles.
Did they themselves take individual action that they advocated, such as refusing to operate trains or work in factories or something like that?
Yes, they did. They refused to man ships that were carrying munitions. And they refused in other industries, too. Of course, the IWW was organized not so much in industries that affected the war, because their organization had always been done in basic industries, such as mining, agriculture, transportation, and so they were not so directly connected with munitions.
Did they commit what you would call overt acts then in these areas?
No, I never heard them accused even of having committed an act of sabotage, because the only acts that I say might be construed as detrimental to the War Act, to the conduct of the war, were the articles that they published in papers and the speeches that they made, because they were quite open about that.
When they refused to work a ship, I suppose they were just discharged, is that it?
I think they went on strike. Now, I'm not, my memory is not so good on those details.
The IWW and the corrupted slogan that it was made into, I Won't Work, did bear some resemblance to the truth then, didn't it?
Well, only in this way, that if they could not get conditions that they wanted on the jobs that they were hired for, then they would not work. Mm-hmm. But as a slogan that would put them in the category of hobos or tramps, that isn't true at all. They always took that slogan of I Won't Work as a sort of joke. Mm-hmm. And there's some doubt, too, as to the origin of that word wobblies, which is used often to describe the IWW. Nobody seems to know the origin of it exactly, but they always look upon it as a mere joke to be called wobblies instead of industrial workers of the world, which is quite a mouthful.
Yeah. Well, the...
Two or three people of the IWW were tried in various parts of the state, and it was only after the law had been in operation for about a year and a half that I discovered, accidentally by publicity in the Chicago papers, that W.E. Townsend, who was the third of three professional witnesses or stool pigeons that were out here in California testifying to all of the depredations they had committed while they were members of the organization. And upon their confessions of these various acts of sabotage and destruction, the other men were convicted without even having a word mentioned of their having taken part in any of those acts. That was the way that the criminal syndicalism law was operated in California all the time. As far as the IWW men were concerned, the individual man on trial for his liberty sat there as a figurehead. He was never questioned. He was not asked, were you in North Dakota on such and such a date? He was not asked any questions at all. He just sat there. The only thing that he ever did was to admit his membership in the organization.
The IWW?
Yes.
Didn't he have a lawyer?
They had lawyers who defended the whole organization, but the individuals were never singled out. It's very hard for people to understand putting, we'll say, eight men on trial in Sacramento, mm-hmm. and the trial lasting perhaps a full court month, and not one of these men being asked, were you anywhere at a certain point? But the stool pigeons testify every day what they did on certain days in North Dakota or in Kansas or in California. And upon the testimony of what those three same men did all over the country, the men in these definite localities are sent to prison.
And they're not allowed to say anything?
They could if they made a demand, but they had so much contempt for the court that they were being tried in that they made no attempt to defend themselves.
Were there no defenses made in any of these cases?
Very seldom. Hmm. Because the accusation was not made against the man who was on trial. The accusation was made against the organization mm-hmm. by these stool pigeons. It seems unbelievable.
Incredible,
at this late day.
Yeah.
For instance, in Los Angeles, there were 27 men, members of the IWW, brought into court. And the judge asked each one the same question. Will you renounce your membership in the IWW and turn your card into the court and the case against you will be dismissed? No. Each of the 27 was asked the same question and each one answered a firm no. So they were put on trial in the usual manner with these three stool pigeons testifying against them. And they never uttered a word during the entire trial. And finally they were all convicted and they were handcuffed together, twos and twos, and brought in a bus to San Quentin. And the newspapers all over the country had the story that these handcuffed men sang their songs from their red songbook all the way in the bus up to San Quentin. And never was there a complaint, never anything but joyfulness and cheerfulness among them. They were marched into San Quentin prison.
Glad to be martyrs, is that it?
It wasn't that so much. They couldn't be martyred. They refused to submit to any sort of conquest of mind or body. Mm-hmm. And then in San Quentin, they're largely responsible for improving conditions in San Quentin, because whenever they were dissatisfied with anything in prison, they went on strike.
They'd learned well on the outside, hadn't they?
Yeah.
The warden and prison authorities had a lot of trouble with them then?
Not a lot of trouble, because they could negotiate with them. Mm-hmm. They handled things on the inside of the prison in an organized manner, the same as they did on the outside. They elected their delegate to confer with the authorities and make demands and then report back to them, and they would decide what action to take.
Mm-hmm.
That was true in Leavenworth as well as in San Quentin.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave the authorities a great deal of respect for the IWW. They were always considered model prisoners. But they were very independent. They were not model prisoners in that they were kowtowing to the officials at all. But they met them on an equal basis.
Mm-hmm.
And Elmer Coots, who had joined him and been instructed by him in California, they were given jobs with the police department in various parts of the state after the IWW cases were finished. But Townsend was not given such a job, and that's why he was disgruntled and confessed.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That, I think, has skipped many people's minds. Of course, whenever the IWW had men in prison, they were holding meetings on the outside and having speakers in the field and attempting to raise funds, and they put on entertainments for the purpose of raising funds. Well, in June of 1924, there was such an entertainment given down in San Pedro, California, and there were three little children who danced and sang, about from 8 to 10 years old, who were contributing their services to provide entertainment for that evening. And a group of patriotic citizens raided the hall, threw the piano out the window, and set these three little children down in a boiling urn of coffee.
Oh, great.
Just long enough to scald them. And they had to be taken to the hospital. And then they captured seven of the members of the IWW and took them out into the woods and barren fields around San Pedro at that time, and tarred and feathered them and turned them loose miles from the city. Came back to California again, and in 1928 I started to work on the case of Thomas J. Mooney, who had already spent 12 years in prison by that time.
How come you'd overlook Mooney?
Conquer the whole world again. He had an immense amount of courage and spirit. Nothing defeated him. He would try one thing and work on it for months, and then, for instance, attempting to elect a governor who would be favorable to him.
Mm-hmm.
And the campaign would fail, and the next morning he'd be ready with another one.
Mm-hmm.
He was indefatigable. He worked, the amount of work that I have discovered that he did, even lately, in going over some records and things, it just doesn't seem possible that one man could have tackled so many problems in his life as Tom Mooney did.
Mm-hmm.
And if that was the reason that he was suspected and arrested for the Preparedness Day explosion, was because he had his irons in so many fires.
Mm-hmm. He was such a dangerous character.
Well, he was dangerous to people who wanted the status quo to exist as it had been existing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not a violent man, but he... At times, his judgment was not very good, and he made enemies without knowing it, because he was a strong character, one who didn't compromise.
Mm-hmm.
So it was merely his personality which defeated him in not being able to be acquitted of the charge of Preparedness Day explosion. And the explosion was handled in a very strange way. They never pursued any clue to the perpetrators of it unless they led these clues led to Mooney. Mm. They just dropped all other clues. Mm. It was cut and dried before the man went on trial and before Billings went on trial, too.
Imprisoned by public opinion, manufactured by the papers?
Yes. Not the papers as much as the prosecuting attorney's office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because the papers were willing, and I think have always been willing, to print the truth about a case like that.
Mm-hmm.
They especially were in connection with the Mooney case. He wrote three letters to a friend of his in Illinois suggesting that he come out here and he could get him on as a witness. And the man had never been in California, had never seen the parade, probably didn't even know about it. And those letters fell into the hands of a labor editor in Chicago, and he investigated the whole matter and got all the facts and put them before the editor of the San Francisco Bulletin, Fremont Older.
Mm-hmm.
And Older published a paper, an issue, with the headline, Fickert Framed Mooney.
Mm-hmm.
And when it went on the street, one of the first persons to read it was Fickert.
Mm-hmm.
And a few minutes later, he met Fremont Older in the lobby of the Palace Hotel and knocked him down, and he went to the hospital. And so from that moment on, the newspapers, especially the Call the Bulletin, it wasn't the Call Bulletin in those days,
no.
And the Daily News supported the Mooney case with everything they had, only because Colbert Olson was elected by a large majority, and he had made a pledge that if he were elected, his first official act would be to pardon Tom Mooney, and he did it. Yes, but not quite so flagrantly as Mooney was, because they tried Billings first and sentenced him, convicted him and sentenced him, but they had established a technique and learned a method in handling the Billings case, and they perfected it in the Mooney case.
Mm-hmm. Well, after 1938, you were working on the Billings case, I take it.
April 1939, I organized this committee consisting of AFL and CIO labor men, and we approached Governor Olson, and as a result of our efforts, he commuted the sentence to time served of Billings in October of 1939. A great deal of satisfaction. I'd rather have done that with the satisfactions that I did receive than to have made $50,000 in money and put it in the bank. The fact that it was a very broadening experience to know people who were under the shadow of life imprisonment or hanging, when you knew yourself that they were innocent, it gives one a feeling of having something rather godlike, because you have met with something primeval, something that is, you must do something about it, because you can't just stand aside and let it go on. And you plunge in, you try to do something to prevent that terrible disaster.
Mm-hmm.
And if enough people do that, the disaster is prevented. That's why I say that the only failure that I feel that I've had was in that Odell Waller case. All the others have eventually turned out, although it took a great deal of time, and some of them have turned out with the proper kind of result.
And that's an interesting thing. The objective, which it had, is not capable. Let's leave you.
I would not say that the IWW is non-existent. It has a membership in the in various parts of the United States, but in comparison with the vast membership that it had before the First World War, it cannot be as effective as it could have been at that time if it had not been so deliberately prosecuted out of existence.
This is how you think it failed.
I think that the reason for all the prosecutions was that the ruling class realized that there was an enemy that they must defeat.
And they
used every method that they could to do so. Maybe they haven't.
You hope.
That's a note to quit upon, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? Thank you very much, Mary Gallagher.
I'm very glad to have been able to do this.